The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, it's certainly been a roller coaster week in terms of tariffs and trade. And the latest news, of course, is that China has announced additional tariffs on US goods. It's up to 125% from 84%. So we'll be talking about that tariff war, which has been paused in terms of the EU and many other countries, but still rattles on in terms of China. At home, HICWA published that groundbreaking report stating the use of unlicensed springs in surgeries at Temple Street Children's Hospital in Dublin was wrong. And after a long 4 months, the Dáil is setting up those committees which will be necessary in order to pass any legislation. I'm joined in studio by Malcolm Byrne, Fianna Fáil TD for Wicklow Wexford, Rose Conway Walsh, Sinn Féin TD for Mayo and spokesperson for Enterprise, Tourism and Employment, Jennifer Bray, a political editor in the Sunday Times Ireland, new job, congratulations to Jennifer, and Dr. Emma Howard, lecturer in economics at TU Dublin. And Emma, we'll start with you as the economics expert. What is going on with the tariffs and how do tariff wars end? In tears?
In tears, yeah, with everybody losing essentially. So what's going on is we've had a huge amount of uncertainty that has very much affected the markets and in particular the reaction of the bond markets to Trump's announcement of tariffs on so-called Liberation Day really spooked the bond markets. And what we saw was that stock markets, when stock markets fall, generally speaking, investors want to put their money into a safe haven. So they move their money into bond markets and we see the yields for bonds falling along with stock markets. We saw the opposite happening this week, which is really indicative of the fact that investors were no longer thinking about US debt or US Treasury bonds as a safe place to keep their money. And so there was a big sell-off of US debt. That resulted in a U-turn by Trump, one of a number he's done on tariffs already. So what we've seen is he's announced a 90-day pause on those so-called reciprocal tariffs he announced on Liberation Day. And we're back to the blanket 10% of tariffs on every country, apart from China, where actually what we're seeing is they've announced today that the total tariff on China now is 145%.
And China's at 125%.
Imports. So, yeah, huge escalation in those wars between those two countries.
What do you make of China's contention it would be there until the end, whatever that end would be?
It's really hard to see how this is going to be resolved between these two nations, and they're two of the biggest economies in terms of the global economic market. So
talk to me about though how much of American debt does China actually hold?
So American debt, about a third of it is owned by foreigners in general, and the biggest holder of American debt is China, followed by Japan.
You've got to ask yourself, how did they allow that to happen, given that they do see China as their global competitor?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they freely trade treasuries on the bond market. So, you know, they can't stop people buying US debt. And, you know, for a long time, the US has been like the dollar is the global currency. It's been seen as a very safe place to put your money. And, you know, that's because it has been the biggest economic power
in
the world.
Could China sink the dollar?
Well, we've seen the dollar is now, if we look at the dollar against the euro today, it's at a 3-year low against the euro. So we're seeing that the dollar is falling and we're seeing, you know, investors are moving their money. Gold is at an all-time high. So we're seeing investors moving their money away from US so-called what would have been safe assets and moving it into gold and away from US
now
markets.
For the American consumer, buying anything with dollars then coming from overseas would be more expensive for them without any of the tariffs.
And if you look at what like the main goods that China exports to the US, so it's computers, it is batteries that go into electric vehicles, it is smartphones. And so if you look at the knock on effects, for example, on Apple, if they're looking at 145% tariff on their iPhones, that's going to hit Apple. It's going to hit the US lots of US producers, and it's going to have knock-on effects for us as well.
You didn't mention that MAGA hats, they're made in China as
MAGA
well.
MAGA hats, yeah. And, lots
and
of,
Trump Bibles are
and
made
lots
in China.
Of clothing and lots of children's toys. So, you know, we know that tariffs always impact the consumer negatively and they're going to feed into inflation. We're going to see much higher inflation in the US. We're already seeing it.
And in Ireland, the American tourist will get fewer bangs for their buck, literally. If the dollar has fallen,
they will. They're, yeah, exactly. You know, we have seen an increase in American tourists coming to Ireland because it has been good value because of how strong the dollar was. And we're going to see a reversal in that trend.
All right, Jennifer, your comments on this war and how it will possibly end. I mean, the Chinese don't like to lose face. It's an Asian thing, they say. And Donald Trump, I mean, he's already done U-turns, but he has put a brave face on the losing of that face.
Yeah, he has. And those in his inner circle and his cabinet have kind of parroted the line during the week that all of this turbulence was part of some wider plan that he had, so that he was masterminding effectively. And I was texting a couple of different officials in the Irish government in the last few days for a piece I'm working on. I asked a lot of them, does anyone actually believe that? And one response said, not a single person. I think that what happened was he was spooked by the markets. The markets won. And now he has to find a way to kind of present this U-turn as something which he planned all along. My impression was that in the immediate aftermath of the announcement of the 90-day pause, there was relief within the Irish government, and I'm sure in different European capitals. And then since then, it's almost kind of the dawning reality that actually we're still subject to 10% tariffs, which I think will apply till at least July. And that Trump
and
is still...
And steel and aluminium tariffs are still
25%.
There anyway.
And also that Donald Trump has not resiled from his threat, I suppose, to impose special tariffs on pharma. So I think what the Irish government and what the Irish economy is trying to achieve really is a couple of things. No tariffs, if possible. Mitigate a 10% tariff then. Avoid special tariffs on pharma because we have a 73 billion euro export industry. The vast majority of those products, 61%, 62%, are very specific medical goods. So we would be severely hit. Our exposure in terms of tariffs would drop from around 72% of products not being affected to around only 5% of products not being affected by tariffs.
We had a detailed discussion on the programme yesterday about pharma and what we export and how unsurable pharma is from Ireland to the United States. And it's not very unsurable. It can take up to 5 years to get a plant planned and commissioned in the United States. So there's no overnight success. And in the meantime, if he slaps tariffs, all the stuff that we supply to them will go up in price. Therefore, the patient suffers in the United States.
It does. And I suppose the other really important thing about the pharma tariffs is that a lot of the goods that we send over to America are what are known as intermediate goods. So these are products that go on to form a wider product. To slap tariffs on those would hurt the US consumer, both in terms of medical equipment, but also drugs, all of these kind of things. So it would be an extraordinary act of self-harm, I think, for the Trump administration. But the impression that I get from sort of what Irish ministers are picking up on is that Donald Trump is liable to do absolutely anything at any time. So you can't bank on really anything. You just have to manage it.
Now, the question before I go to the politicians to get political strategizing and so on, I want to talk about another thing that Trump kind of muttered about giving favorable status to some manufacturers. And everyone's thinking Tesla, Tesla, Tesla. Because many of the Tesla parts, 40% of the Tesla parts are manufactured overseas. So in order not to put the price up of Elon Musk's vehicles, there's mutterings that he might actually exempt the ingredients for Tesla cars from tariffs. Now, that would be very odd.
It will be extraordinary.
Well,
we
saw that in his last term in the White House. So, he implemented a number of tariffs then. And we saw that many companies got tariff exemptions. And an analysis from academics in the US found that those companies who had previously supported Republican candidates in their state were way more likely to get tariff exemptions than firms who had previously supported Democratic candidates. So we know this is one of the other really distortionary things about tariffs. Where and who gets exemptions is often down to the power of lobbying in the industry and down to political connections. So again, it's even more distortionary because of that.
All right, let's go to our politicians then. Malcolm Byrne, how do we cope with a problem called Trump?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to talk about why trade is important. And as Emma has rightly said, tariffs always in the long run, they hurt small business, they hurt the consumer. And right throughout history, the more that we can encourage free and fair trade around the world, it lifts people out of poverty, it improves living standards. We've seen that within the European Union in terms of barriers being broken down. It's much better for business and it's much better for the consumers. So I think for Europe, there is a bit of a challenge because obviously not just on trade, but on defence and every other issues, 80 years of certainty around the relationship between Europe and the United States has been upended. And precisely as Emma and Jennifer have said, we don't know what Trump is going to do. So we've got to prepare from a European perspective as to how we may be able to cope with effectively a rogue president at the moment. There are big competitiveness challenges for Europe. We need to move toward a capital markets union. We need to break down further barriers to trade within Europe. We need to look at our trading arrangements with other parts of the world. And certainly, I think the pressure now has to be on for Ireland to ratify the CETA, the Comprehensive Economic Trade Agreement with Canada. We do a lot of business with Canada. We need to break down those barriers. There's commitments within the programme for governments, for instance, to enhance and explore greater trade with Latin America and with other parts of Asia. Now, we don't set aside, by the way, and this is important, environmental or human rights or labour standards. We hold those in place. But we need to be, as a small open market economy committed to free and fair trade around the world, we need to reassert the importance of trade.
But a lot of those things you talk about, they're not overnight solutions. I mean, they will take time, much as we say Trump's tariffs might be limited initially, but then do long-term damage. Trying to refocus our trading efforts will take time.
It will, but it's not as easy. So the talk of, you know, Donald Trump wants to increase the US's manufacturing base. It's not as easy. You can't just, for instance, lift a pharmaceutical plant that's based in Ringaskiddy in Cork and suddenly put it in rural Ohio. Apart from the physical construction, you're talking about all of the talents that's going to be there. And that's going to take quite a period of time to build if he wants to build it. I think also, and this is the difficulty, is there's no coherence to the policy. I mean, the announcement about, you know, the 90-day pause, it actually happened just immediately before Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting. The Taoiseach came in, you know, to talk to us about it. And he kind of said, look, we've just got to manage each day as it comes.
I have this vision of all of the Fianna Fáil politicians at the parliamentary party taking out their smartphones and getting onto their broker to buy.
No. Well, it's not. And by the way, and one of the concerns that I would have, which is, and when you see what I would frankly regard as crony capitalism, where what Trump has been doing to benefit some of his supporters, I just worry about that we will see in time, because the stock market suddenly recovers, that you will have seen people close to Trump will have bought shares. I think
there was eavesdropping in one of the things he did in the Oval Office, and he was bragging about so-and-so over there who made $200 million and so-and-so over there who made...
But this impacts on, I mean, this impacts on consumers, and, you know, and it's ultimately... You know, when it comes to Americans paying for their drugs, for their children's toys, it's ordinary people who are going to end up paying the cost of his actions.
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem, because obviously it's a clear act of self-sabotage. But you see, so we have this space now where you have to negotiate. It's very difficult to negotiate when you don't know what the end game is or what he actually wants at the end of the day. But I absolutely think it was a case of clear insider trading. You know, so all of the rules are broken. Everything is set aside. The WTO, everything else. And we need to be very careful here. Now, I am pleased in terms of the way the EU are managing it in terms of keeping the rules, because I suppose the temptation is to go down the rabbit hole after him. But we clearly, what we need to do here is to negotiate on the EU level, but we also need to have a very strong Irish voice at EU as well.
Now, what do we do about our response to aluminium and steel, those tariffs are still there? So we because we reacted so slowly, we're getting those responses mixed up with the latest round of tariffs, which are going to cost us, 20% plus the 25% for aluminium, because we were so slow in reacting. Those two get confused.
Yeah, but I think we couldn't have reacted that time. I think the right thing was to do is to keep a cool head. But when you think of not all the aluminium and steel, but the derivatives from that, so like the cans of beer, cans of beverages, the whole impact of that, the way it's going to work through the supply chains and everything else that's connected. Everyone is trying to kind of crunch the numbers and see exactly what it'll mean at the end of the day. So we don't know. There's an awful lot that we don't know. There are things that we will know, obviously, in maybe even in a couple of weeks' time as the modelling continues to be done. But then, of course, the goalposts can move on the way along. But there is one certainty. So we have to look at the constants here. And the constant is our own competitiveness. And the competitiveness in terms of the investment in water, the investment in housing, because what all of the big companies are saying to us is we have no place to house our workers. So it's that. It's water, it's housing, it's rail, it's energy, all of those things. Now, we know that when we had the review of the National Development Plan in 21, we set targets at that time, which was 5% of GNI star. We haven't met that in any year. We were short 2.5 billion, 2.4 billion last year, even as it is. And that's leaving inflation out of it altogether. So we are way behind in terms of our competitiveness. I'm very concerned, obviously, coming from Mayo and the West and MedTech, and in terms of even us being further behind in terms of infrastructure there. So there are immediate shovel-ready projects that need to be done. Business needs to be looked at. And regardless of what happens, and this isn't just to serve FDI, but also the Indigenous businesses, tourism and everything else that we need, we have to do that. We have the money to do it. We have to do it urgently, that investment.
Companies, we may not have the workers to do it. We are, yes, flat out in terms of construction. Yeah. So,
but there will be projects that won't be heavy in terms of labour that can be done as well, where the work is done there. What businesses want to see, and we met with the American Chamber of Commerce during the week and we're meeting with businesses constantly, is action. So we're having a review of the National Development Plan in May, but what we don't want to see is just another review, another report, another review, and so on. It's action. It's getting these things
done. Malcolm, why are we so sluggish about getting these things done?
Well, I think I wanted just to pick up on 2 points with Rose, and I agree with a lot of what she's saying. In terms of talent pool, by the way, I think that there may be potentially an opportunity for Ireland now, because the US is a less attractive place for researchers, for postdocs. We could now become a global centre to attract some of the world's brightest talents to come here. I know Minister James Lawless is exploring that space, and I think Ireland needs to position ourselves as a global centre for talent. The second I'd just say to Rose, though, is, and I totally agree with her, it is important at European Union level we act as one voice. It's going to be critical, the decisions taken at EU level over the next number of months at EU Council meetings. It's going to be very important that the Taoiseach, the Trade Minister and others are there. I just hope that when our ministers have to attend at EU Council meetings, that Sinn Féin and the opposition will facilitate a pair. And I would ask, when it is critically important that our ministers are there, Rose. Yeah. So I'm just asking you, when we need to be at those tables, will Sinn Féin ensure a pair for those ministers to be there?
This is much bigger than pairing, I would say.
Very straightforward question. Will you facilitate pairing for those vital meetings?
I cannot tell you that now. I cannot tell you that.
In other words, you won't wear the green jersey when we're playing away.
Look, we will. But I'll tell you one thing, Pat, what's really serious. We're talking about attracting talent here. And that absolutely is the way to go. We need to bring our young people back who have moved, you know, who have left university, our brightest and our best in the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years. They need to come back. But they need somewhere to live. They need a home to live in. And right now, they don't have that. The other thing is in terms of innovation. So say our PhD students, I shouldn't call them students, but PhD researchers who are doing crucial, valuable work. Our innovation here is going to be critical in the next number of years. And if we keep treating them the way that we've been treating them, we are not going to get what we need here. So pairs, we'll work out the pairs as we go along, Malcolm. I wouldn't sweat about it.
Well, no, I think it is important, because if Peter Burke, it's the principle of this, Rose. You're marking Peter Burke as Enterprise Minister. If Peter Burke is called as Enterprise and Trade Minister to a meeting of the European Council on a Wednesday evening when you know the voting bloc takes place, you're his opposite number. You're a very capable spokesperson. In the national interest, would you then agree to pair?
In the national interest, I will always show up, but I'd say the government have a big majority.
He wants you not to show up. That's what that's
I will be showing up. Don't worry, Malcolm. I'll be there.
I know you will be, Rose, but this is around facilitating
Jennifer,
the pair.
We're obviously going to move on to committees and pairings and all the fallout from all of that rowing that was going on. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But I want to go back to you, Emma, about insider trading and what Trump was up to. I mean, is it possible? I've no doubt that some of his pals made a lot of money when the stock market rebounded because insiders had a 20-minute window, a 20-minute advantage over everybody else.
And it's funny, actually, when Jennifer was talking about, you know, he didn't have a master plan, I was thinking the only master plan he possibly had was to make himself and his cronies more money because, you know, we know as president, he hasn't divested his interests. He is selling his own cryptocurrencies. His wife and his children are selling cryptocurrencies. And I have no doubt that he would...
But he has probably stripped all the people out who might hold him.
Exactly. And that's the big difference between this term and the last one, where he has now put people around him who just say yes, who don't push back against his crazy, chaotic economic policies. And it's quite possible. I mean, we saw him tweeting, I think, maybe the morning that he announced the pause, saying now is a great time to buy.
Assigned DJT, which was not typical of him. Yeah. And that may have been a code.
That may. And we know Elon Musk has been for many years manipulating Tesla share prices with his tweets and his you know, announcing of certain information and so on. So
it is extraordinary, though, isn't it?
It's extraordinary,
Like, there was a time in life, I remember, where something like that would be the biggest story in the world and it would be reasons for a president to leave. And now it's just normal.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, the question of... who has the president's ear? We know that Elon Musk called Peter Navarro a moron and also said he was as dumb as a sack full of bricks. And it would suggest that Elon has the president's ear rather than... But maybe there were more voices than Elon's in the president's ear saying, hang on, I lost $20 billion yesterday. What are you going to do about it, Mr. President? If you want donations for your party next time round, they won't be forthcoming if you do this to us.
Oh, a lot of his... business partners, business friends down through the years, and investors, the markets, everyone in those categories were in his ear. And I think eventually he had to listen. And I know that in the White House, in the Oval Office, in the meeting that they had while he was drafting this extraordinary Truth Social post, as it was called, by Howard Lutnick, that Howard Lutnick was in that meeting and also the Treasury Secretary. And they were, I think, trying to coax him a little bit and say, this is what's happening. It's only going to get worse. Goldman Sachs have now put their, you know, chance of a recession up to 45%. Was that what caused him that kind of pressure to take, maybe?
Emma, we had a massive rebound. And then yesterday, again, the stocks were in the red.
Yeah,
so it was a one-day wonder.
It was a one-day wonder. And I mean, one, he's only announced a 90-day pause. So who knows what's going to happen in the 90 days. But I think, two, those levels of uncertainty. So a lot of estimates say that levels of uncertainty are as damaging as tariffs on an economy. So, you know, this level of uncertainty is really harmful for markets and for the economy overall.
So it's Donald Trump as the new Liz Truss.
Yes.
That's basically it.
On steroids, yes.
There's a difference, though, with Liz Truss in that there what happened was the Conservative Party, there were the checks and balances, and her party called her back. The problem with the Republican Party at the moment is there are no voices, practically no voices within the Republican Party calling back, in many cases because Republican members of Congress are terrified that they will face a primary challenger that will be bankrolled by
Musk,
you know, Musk and Trump's cronies. So you actually, the only one you saw was Mitch McConnell, who's on his way out, speaking out on the Republican side.
But Mitch McConnell is a shameful figure in American politics because they could have nailed Trump after the January the 6th, and he did not. So he will go down in infamy in history.
I agree, Pat, but like there is nobody else. And it's in most other, you know, to Jennifer's point, in most other political systems, there are those checks and balances, which is what happened when Liz Truss went off, you know, and Kwasi Kwarteng on their crazy proposal in the UK, the Conservative Party said no and pulled them back.
Okay.
That's not happening
in the US. I'm going to pause this one and we'll talk about domestic politics after this.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Break.
.ie.
This.
Well, now we're continuing with our Friday forum. Just a couple of comments here. Chris Christie, Romney, etc. There are some Republicans with the braveness to speak out, but they've all been put down by the gutless Republican Party. There's only one thing worse than a dictator who knows what they're doing, and that's one who doesn't. Trump will drive the US into a ditch, says John. Well, now we want to talk about the HICWA report during the week and the shadow it cast on Children's Health Ireland. Emma. I mean, it is a shocking story that springs that were not authorized for medical use were used in this particular way, with the danger of tarnishing, and so they had to be removed, with more discomfort and worry for both the child and the parents.
It's a really upsetting, horrible story, and my heart goes out to any of the families involved. I'm a mother of two young children, and I think the trust that's required to give your child over into somebody else's sure. care for something like that is massive. And this has really, I think, hit the trust of parents in the hospital system and in the services that we provide. I mean, the report said that the surgeon, him or herself, it was Surgeon A, I believe, was well-intentioned but ill-considered. But I think what's really striking in the report is that, like, it was a complete systems failure. And what they pointed out is that there were overly complex governance structures and management arrangements in place. And I think this is something that's a huge structural issue with our health service overall, in that we spend a huge amount of money. So if you look at our spending per inhabitant in Ireland on healthcare, we're the third highest in the EU, well above the EU average.
And we're not getting bangs for the
buck. But we're not getting, because the efficiencies in how we spend it aren't there.
Yeah, I think it's important to look, I suppose, at the timeline of how this happened, because it leads to one really important question, I think. So we know that the surgeon attended a conference on early onset scoliosis, whereby I think there was a team from Netherlands, a team of researchers who presented their findings about
an innovative approach to
this. Yes, but these were medical grade springs that were used kind of by that Dutch university, who, by the way, told Hickwood that they were not consulted by the Surgeon A. So those outcomes from that study hadn't been published. And then you had a situation whereby in the HICR report, and I think this is a key question that hasn't been answered yet, they talked about a meeting that took place in Temple Street in and around August 2019 that this surgeon presented his plans, I suppose, to a Children's Health Ireland meeting. There's no record of that meeting. There are no minutes. We don't know who attended still. So to me, until those questions are answered, I can't understand how the government can.
Are we saying that the minutes were just not taken? Or were destroyed?
They just can't be found.
They can't be found. Mm. That's a bit worrying.
I think that's a huge question that hasn't been answered yet.
Now, over to the politicians again, and confidence in Children's Health Ireland, with the chair resigning. Malcolm?
So the chair has resigned. And I think, I mean, it's just it's a horrific story. When you...
I mean, do you want more heads to roll?
Well, I think it may need to. I mean, I think Emma summed it up very well when people think about, you know, the trust that you're placing. And it has done enormous damage to the trust that people will place. There was clearly, obviously, you know, what the surgeon concerned did was wrong. But there are questions then around, you know, the peer review and why this wasn't questioned and so on. And we do need to get all of those answers. There's obviously the audit has happened. There will be a scoping exercise. I think it's been very clear. The Taoiseach, and indeed the Minister for Health, Jennifer Karen McNeill, has said, look, this is going to be pursued until we get all of the answers to ensure, first of all, it never happens again, okay. but that those are held accountable. I do think that there may need to be a case. The whether the board needs to resign, the chair has resigned, the board needs to be in place to get a new chair put in place. So we need that continuity. But I do think that if there was any awareness on the part of the board, as Jennifer has outlined, then their question is not tenable. We don't know the answer to that yet. But if it does become the case that they were aware of what was happening, I don't
Rose.
Think that can stay.
Yeah, I mean, what's happened here is absolutely horrific. You know, the failures that cover across the board, you know, the management, the governance, the risk assessment, the ethics and the informed consent. And it's absolutely, I suppose, disastrous. But you talk about how this is going to be brought forward. I know David Cullinan has advocated that there would be a Scally-type inquiry into it. But obviously this has to be in proper consultation with the families that are impacted. But the reason we would say a Scally-type inquiry is that it would be time-limited, so it would be shorter. And can you get the job done? What we don't want, I suppose, is an inquiry, a statutory inquiry, that's going to run on for years and years. And
OK, but here's the issue. You have simultaneously, or just before this report came out, you have the articulation by people in Crumlin, by surgeons in Crumlin, about the inadequate manning plan, the manpower plan for the new children's hospital, whether or not there'll be enough people to do the job, whether the transition will even be safe. So we raised this on this programme about manpower planning and would they be able to open the children's hospital on time and effectively and safely. Mm. And we got no answers from Children's Health Ireland, just a reassurance that they were kind of thinking about it. I mean, that's the bigger question marks maybe than scoliosis.
And I mean, we have capacity issues, as you mentioned. So Ireland's at full employment. And what we're seeing is lots of our graduate doctors are going abroad and staying abroad because it's almost like it's a self-fulfilling vicious cycle in that, you know, the health service is under such pressure that doctors and nurses are under such pressure in their jobs day to day that, you know, they don't want to stay here. And it's hard. We've got lots of vacancies across the health service. How we're going to fill the new positions required in the new children's hospital is
Jennifer,
a serious issue.
There's another issue for CHI as well. I think that the report also highlighted sort of a lack of oversight on a small number of spina bifida cases where there were sort of serious surgical issues that had emerged. There seemed to be cultural issues. There seemed to be communications issues within that kind of orthopaedic unit. And that lack of oversight, there seems to have been some kind of breakdown in various different parts. Those questions haven't been answered either. And the children's hospital story has been one of the most controversial. I mean, it'll be the most expensive hospital in the world. And yet we still don't know categorically when it will open. We don't.
But there has to be political accountability for this as well. I mean, this spans over a number of years. It spans over two health ministers. But as shocking as it is, I'm not surprised. And the reason I'm not surprised is that parents come to me all of the time with complaints about different aspects and how they're treated. And what I find more often than not is that the family becomes the target. So they're a contrary family, or it's just the family, and the answers aren't given. So we contact hospitals. This is throughout the country at different times to seek accountability for parents. And it doesn't always happen. So who is in charge here? And where is the political accountability? Where is the ministers in this? You know, who has to ensure that the proper governance and the proper accountability is there? Harm was done. The first job of any government is to protect its citizens. And my God, if we can't protect the babies and the young children, where are we going?
I agree, but I think, Rose, you will have heard the Taoiseach on the floor of the Dáil this week, and indeed Minister Jennifer Karen McNeill has been very clear. There is a process that's been followed through. At all times, the first interest has to be about those cases, those children who were impacted and their families. Obviously, there's now an assessment to see is it wider. There was a systems failure. And I think in fairness, you know, Minister Karen McNeill has been made very clear, you know, there are no options are off the table. There's a process we're going through, and Jennifer's right. There's still certain answers that we have to get. And on the basis of those answers, we do.
But do you have confidence in the Children's Health Ireland to run the new Children's Hospital? Well, get it open on time.
I'm deeply frustrated, Pat, on it, because like with everyone, because during the Seanad, the last time of the Seanad, I regularly raised a question around the ongoing costs and how, you know, and most.
But there
people
was an attitude about this project: in for a penny, in for a pound. And they decided on the site at St James, which absolutely was inappropriate in terms of its location and its size and all the rest of it. But they pushed on. All the politicians became cheerleaders for that site. It was unbelievable.
And I think there is a problem with health more so than any other government department. Emma is right in terms of health is not a money issue. We are pumping money into health.
But you're wasting
money. But we're not getting.
Yeah. But money's been wasted there. It's like, you see, you look at the hundreds of children then that are waiting for scoliosis operation. I have one, Mikey, who came up to the Dáil last week, 16 years of age. His operation was delayed and delayed. And then he's just sent home by CHI and then begging for a second opinion, to try and get an opinion from abroad to save his life, basically. And that is the story of what's happening here. And it just is not right.
And that's the heartbreaking part, is that families are having to advocate and to go to politicians and to go on outlets like this to talk about while their children are in pain and sitting on waiting lists. And
Jennifer,
we have 241 waiting the most recent figures.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago that the government was promising to bring down the waiting lists for children waiting on scoliosis treatments to 4 months, which never happened, although I do know there has been an improvement in the waiting lists. And just separately, the thing about the children's hospital was the government, they went ahead with this contract. It got to a certain stage where they were moving from basically below ground work to above ground work, where there was a point of no return. Basically, it would have involved getting a new contractor, which might have cost more money. And it just, that situation hit that point a couple of years ago. Yeah. And it's the taxpayer who suffers for that.
It is popular to slam the contractor, bam, for all of this. Mm. But, I mean, extras arrive in every building project, whether it's your extension out the back. If you change something, and it seems there's been change after change after change after change in this project because the design work wasn't done by Children's Health Ireland and its associates before they started.
That's what BAM have said. You know, they have pointed out that there were a whole raft of design changes or incomplete designs as well throughout the course of the building. And we know that there's been kind of a lot of claims made worth a lot of money. A lot of that has gone to court. So it's become a legal battle as well. And every time that I frequently put in freedom of information requests for the minutes of these meetings, and every time I get back a request, in every document there is some new delay.
And then you look for copies of the contracts. In a lot of these things, it's not only Children's Hospital, but it's commercial sensitivities. You can't have that.
Yes.
The design of the contract from the beginning, and so many of these things, there's an absolute failure there. It hasn't been got right. And who's accountable? Nobody.
There is a question on, and Pat, you make the point about it, and any of your listeners will know, if you are building a house or anything else, or if you get a project manager in, you know, whoever the project manager is, they need to be held to account. And I do think, it wasn't for nothing, I think, that Brian Cowan called the Department of Health Angola. There has been a long-running problem, and I certainly know, you know, Stephen Donnelly found this bizarre situations where, as a minister, he made a decision and effectively elements of the HSE ignored him. And it's not acceptable anymore. I think our biggest problem in this country has been around the delivery of projects.
They point out that some of the roads projects were delivered on time and on budget.
It can be done, but the question then is
question. We didn't get around to talking about the committees. They will be formed, and they will be the goodies will be shared out proportionately, isn't that so, Malcolm? But last question, really, about for all of you: who do you want to see as president? Uachtaráin na hÉireann. Come on, Rose, are you running?
I couldn't tell you that, Pat. We will decide. I'll tell you what's important to me.
Luke Ming Flanagan, someone who attracts you?
I tell you what's really important to me. It's that somebody who wants Irish unity and the reunification of our country. And that's absolutely honest. Somebody who will work towards that for us being in charge of our own affairs.
Mary Hughes ruled herself out. So.
And I think the more turmoil we have geopolitically, the more it speaks to us that we need to be in charge
Malcolm,
of our own affairs.
Who do you want to see as president?
I'm taking it, Pat, that you're not declaring on the room here this morning.
I'm ruling myself out definitively.
I think if you notice what's happening in presidential elections, where either President Higgins, President McAleese, President Rumson, they kind of captured the zeitgeist or the mood of the nation at the time. And I think what's going to be important is in this time of geopolitical turbulence that you will have somebody who is there that will reflect our Irish values globally,
Jennifer.
Human rights, the rule of law, democracy.
I will remain unbiased, but if there are any presidential candidates listening and they'd like to give me the exclusive about running, hit me up today. I'm on my phone.
Emma?
I'm going to remain unbiased as well, but I think it's really important that we have somebody who is a good representative for Ireland and adheres to Irish values and sticks within the remits of the role of president.
On that note, Dr. Emma Howard, lecturer in economics at TU Dublin, Jennifer Bray, political editor with the Sunday Times Ireland, Rose Conway Walsh, Sinn Féin TD for Mayo, spokesperson on enterprise, tourism and employment, and Malcolm Byrne, Fianna Fáil TD for Wicklow Wexford. Thank you, one and all. A reminder that our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the Newstalk Hour app powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on Newstalk.